Hello and welcome to Inside the Manny. My name is Matt, and in this episode, producer Jeff is joining me as co-host. Our guest today is Johnny Discos. Now, some of you may know him from being that friendly, efficient waiter at Patrico Bar on Stupa Seafront. But actually, Johnny is much more well-known throughout Greece from appearing twice on the talent show The Voice. Hi, Johnny.
Hello, Matt. Hello, Jeff.
Yep, so hello, everybody. This is my inaugural appearance on the podcast. And basically, I thought, why let Matt have all the fun talking to Johnny? Because me and Johnny know each other from musical connections, so I thought it would be nice if all three of us could have a chat. So hello everybody, hello Johnny, hello Matt. We like to start off with a little bit of an anecdote on each podcast, and you were telling me, Johnny, you generally, well, for the last few years you've been spending your summers here working at Patrico in the Manny. And you mentioned there were some sort of serendipitous events that kind of led you to here in the first place. So how did that come about?
Yeah, you know, it was 2023, like January or February, where I had already worked for a couple of years in service, like in kitchen and waiting tables and beach bars. But I kind of... I wanted to, if I were going to work service or for a seasonal job, I really wanted to go somewhere in Manny, because my mother is from Manny. I used to spend all of my summers in mm-hmm. Exohori and in Kardamili and in not that much Stupa, but I really enjoyed my summers here. So I said, if I'm going to work somewhere, at least work somewhere beautiful where... Well, you know, the pay is usually better. There's more diverse people, which is always a plus when you work in service. And I initially wanted to work somewhere else, but they wouldn't reply to me when the time came. So I was pretty unsure what I wanted to do. And I met Irini, Christina's daughter from Patrico, in a party in my last workplace. And I thought, oh, you're from Stupa. I go to Manny all the time and all the summers. And I was going to work in Stupa, but in the end, I don't know what's going on and if I will, because they're not answering. And she said, well, come work for us. I said, what do you do? Well, we do everything.
So simple as that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, met them a week later and started working after a month. And when I always say that I don't want, not to come back to Patrico, but I don't want to work service anymore. But every year I decide that I'd like to work, and every year I come back.
So how many years in total have you been there?
It's my fourth year now.
Four, is it? Yeah. Right, okay.
Did Irini know at the time that you're a musician? Maybe not so much now, but you've done a lot of street performing in Kalamata, and you play in Patrico now as well as being a barman there. Did you sell yourself as a music man or just a service guy?
I didn't have to. I mean, my name speaks for itself when talking about service, because it's literally translates into a tray. Discos. So
Johnny Discos.
You could say I was born for this as well. But our mutual acquaintance with Irini, Kostas, used to work at Patrico for a bit. And he used to play music. He was a DJ where I worked. So he was kind of the connection. So the connection was that I was a singer, but also a waiter.
Okay. You used to spend your summers here, you were saying. So I guess you were a kid then or a teenager. I mean, what's the comparison between those times and your summers here now, where you're mainly working? Do you have the same sense of the Manny that you did back then, or is it kind of a different place for you?
I think I have a better sense now, because I've seen a lot more of it. Well, back in the day when we used to come here, we were almost exclusively in Exohori, because, you know, we were teenagers, we didn't have cars, and We would go for swimming somewhere, which usually would be Calogria when we, you know, turned teenagers and wanted to be in places with lots of people and drinks and everything.
When it used to be paradise, huh? Calogria.
I never experienced that.
Oh.
And it's a shame. My mother always tells me I can't stand to be in Calogria nowadays because she remembers it as actually a virgin beach.
You forget that we're old, Matt. Yeah. Johnny's
yeah, sorry,
name.
Johnny.
I wish I had experienced that, but I unfortunately I'm not old enough.
Right, and we shouldn't give Calogria too much of a hard time. It's still a beautiful beach.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the ones on the side.
Yeah, sure.
I've got a little crib sheet here, and I jotted something down that you said when we talked about it, and you said, I never knew the Manny properly until I started working here, so...
I mean, I was not forced, you know, but I was here spending a lot of time here, and after work, you want to do something. So we usually would take the car and go wherever, because it's a small place in the end. I mean, nothing's more than half an hour, 40 minutes away. You can go up in the mountains in some view. You can go in, like, fresh springs and small villages.
Mm.
So I think I've gotten to know Stupa a lot better. I mean, I've only visited like the beachfront until I started working here, and I never made it past the pizza place. Like I wish I knew what Patrico was when I would come here as a teenager. I would have abused the hell about that the pool table they used to have.
Oh yeah, they used to have.
But it's a shame for me, and better for them probably, that I didn't.
Anyone who doesn't know the area or Patrico, where Johnny works, they sort of describe it as a pub, isn't it? Which is really nice because they serve draft beer and they serve draft Guinness, so it's got a different feel, hasn't it? It's a really lovely place.
It is, and it's weird because most people don't even realize we are a bar until they actually come in, because everyone sees the bakery in the front and the beach downstairs, and they always ask me, are you the same place? It's a fair question, to be honest, but nobody guesses that it's brunch and food and coffee and cocktails and all these things.
And live music.
And live music, yeah.
Look, we're going to talk about your music experience, but just give us a very broad idea, because some people might know you from The Voice, some people might know you personally. But so you've got sort of a semi-residency there this summer. You're playing quite regularly. So
yeah, we're doing Mondays every Monday. Me and my friend Christos Poulakidas from Kalamata. We've configured our set to be a nice mix of English and Greek, because Greek people don't want to listen to only English things, and I feel like it's a little bit condescending for English people to play only English music when you know there's lots of English, mainly English, but like generally foreign tourists. So I think they enjoy having the Greek part of it as well.
I totally agree, and it is the obvious thing to do. Unfortunately, the other way round, playing in various bands over the years, I've tried once to do what you do, and I tried to sing a song in Greek, and I looked around and they were in stitches, because and it was Lokomondo Den Kani Krios Din Elada,
which is an amazing song.
It's a great song, but I think I butchered it with my pronunciation. Anyway,
bravo, Matt. You tried.
Well, no, it's good to try.
I try,
you know?
But never again. Okay, so, Johnny, diving a bit deeper into your musical experience, could you tell us just a little bit about sort of training and teaching? Are you completely self-taught, or have you had lessons? Or
I am self-taught in some things, and I had lessons for others. My mom is a piano teacher.
Right.
My dad was a traditional drums and a player. So I got in contact with music from a very early age. But I started learning the saxophone when I was, I think, 11 or 12.
Wow.
And I was playing, I started doing jazz at some point.
Ooh.
And Yeah, no, I'm with Silvio Siros. They used to do the academy here in Mani as well. There was a great teacher and a great band from the Conservatorium of Kalamata. I think I left it at the end of high school because I had to get ready for Panhellenius, you know, the equivalent of the A-levels in Greece. And then he stopped coming to Kalamata, so I stopped learning the saxophone. And I said, wait, why not? I was already in choirs in the music school, and I've already kind of started singing solo, like more rock and modern things in school bands. And in university, I started classical singing in the conservatory. Didn't get a diploma, just I need to get it at some point, but I never even started. Guitar, I'm completely self-taught. Piano, I've had a couple of lessons. I did a couple of years of classical drums, which I quite enjoyed. And anything I can get my hands on, I'll try.
So you went to the music school, which is, well, it is kind of famous in its era. In fact, I was out on the Paralia the other day on the beach road, and I heard a band playing, and I actually stopped to watch them. And it was a load of youngsters. They looked like, you know, 15, 16, 17. They were brilliant. And I thought, who are these people playing? They're great. And I asked someone, they said, oh, they're from the music school. So I know there's a lot of talented people that have gone through that school.
And you know what's the weirdest thing? Those bands that you see playing in venues in Kalamata, in bars and like festivals, they're usually not groups that were formed as a lesson. They're almost exclusively just kids,
yeah,
of all ages, which is one great thing about the music school in Kalamata. There is no discrimination against the different classes, because that is a big thing in like general high schools and in Kalamata. You know, everybody's a little bit, oh, I'm older than you, so I have priority over anything. They're usually very mean to younger kids, whereas in Musiko, it's much, much more united, the whole school, which is a good thing. You see people of, like students of all ages participating in the same choir or the same group, which is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people who live down here permanently, especially maybe the non-Greeks, they're not aware that there's so much going on in Kalamata, sort of culturally, generally, not just music.
It is very active. Kalamata is very active, like the guitar festival, the dance festival, the international choir competitions every 2 years. It's most people don't know because they're not very good at advertising themselves.
Promoting, yeah. Going back to your sort of developments, you've been immersed in music since you were pretty young, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I...
And all different kinds of exposures and influences and...
I like listening to very different stuff. I can say that the only genre of music that I don't particularly enjoy is, like, very heavy metal.
I agree.
Well, in Greek, most Greek music, most modern Greek music is not my favourite to listen to in my own time. But if you look at liked songs on Spotify, it's about 900 songs in
900 genres.
Yes, not 900, but yeah, I saw my Spotify Wrapped, or what is it? It said you have listened to 1,200 different genres this year.
That doesn't surprise me, Yanni. as I said, we've worked on some music projects together, and I know. We've talked about all types of music, and even you've told me some of your projects where you even got like a comedy element to some of the songs.
Whatever comes to mind, I try to jot down, and if I have if I feel like it, I will start doing something. It usually never goes anywhere or doesn't get finished. That's the old curse. But it's a shame to have an idea and not do anything with it, I think.
Yeah, but also I think that's quite unusual because most people who get involved in music for one reason or another get sucked into a scene or a genre. So I think it's quite refreshing. I mean, you were blessed with an amazing, beautiful voice, and I think your voice is very versatile as well. So I think that's a wonderful thing that, you know, you're singing all types, you know, bit jazz, bit of rock, bit of soul, bit of this, bit of that, bit of Greek. I think that's great.
And following on from that, one question I've always wanted to ask you from the very first time I heard you. The very first time I heard you, I wasn't sure what nationality you were because you have no accent when you sing in English. And I've just said, when I tried to sing in Greek, I sounded like an Englishman singing Greek. You don't. How did you achieve that? Or did it just come naturally?
I think I was always good at accents or mimicking, anyways. But I had a great teacher who taught me English, and it was English, not American.
Thumbs up from us.
the original English, you know. And but I don't know, I like it more, and I listen to it a lot more. Like the past 4 years, every summer, I've been listening to English people nonstop.
Well, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and I like picking up things. So it's the most commonly asked question to me while working at Patrico is like, are you English?
Really?
Yes.
So it's not just me. It's
No, it's everyone. And yeah, when I say no, most say, so you must have studied in England. And my response is, well, I spent a week in Wales, but...
Oh, no.
I don't think that was it. But it was always easy for me to mimic accents, and there is nothing worse than bad accent while singing, in English anyways, because I've listened to so many wonderful singers from Kalamata that start singing in English,
yeah,
and it just puts you off.
Yeah, it's a little bit nails on the chalkboard, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's such a shame because, as you say, they've got great voices.
Yeah.
But it gets ruined because the vowels are wrong, everything is...
But at the same time, you said, oh, you tried it once and you... It's different because most English people try and you know, tell, oh, you know English, why don't I know Greek? And I'm... First of all, you'll never use Greek if you're not in Greece.
Yeah.
And second of all, it's very different. Greek has sounds that the English don't have and don't use. So it's always more difficult to make yourself learn a new sound that you have to use consistently is very hard. And I know I studied the Greek language. I didn't finish, but I was in university for becoming a teacher,
right,
of the Greek language. So I usually do help people if they want to improve their Greek. But there's certain sounds that you just can't get right, like the gamma.
Yeah.
Or the delta.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody says d. I mean, you have the sound.
Cardamili.
We
do have the hard the.
But yeah, Nobody uses it. Like when I tell people, they're asking me about a word in Greek, like alvendro, and they always say dendro. I'm like, you have the sound, why don't you use it?
Yeah.
It's the.
Yeah, we have
like saying
it.
The.
Yeah. Okay, Johnny, so I think it's time we now moved on to your experiences up in Athens, appearing on The Voice. Can I just leave it to you to tell us what you'd like to tell us about the whole experience?
Sure, yeah. So my friends always told me, oh, why don't you go? Like from many, many years before, they told me, why don't you go there? And I never wanted to, because I felt it was a little... I think, like in the 2010s, those talent shows were a lot more... aiming to not ridicule people, but they didn't have any filter. They didn't. They only cared about making a good show, and not about like producing talent. So, from what I had seen growing up, I really didn't want to. Until I very clearly remember, I was in a friend's house in Kalamata, somewhere in 2022, and he just turned and told me, "When you've come a long way. You're a great singer now. Why don't you go on The Voice?" And I really said, "Why not?" So I just completed the form, sent it over. Next day, they call me and they say, hey, so we saw the form.
Wow.
I think it's because of my cousin. Because everybody, like when I first went there for the casting, I went in the room and they called my name. So this is Yanis Diskos. And I get in the room and the first thing they tell me before even like good day was, what's your relationship to Yanis Diskos?
And who, he's your cousin being?
He is my first cousin, and he is a quite a well-known musician in Greece right now. Right. He's a saxophone player, and he does arrangements. He used to do the show Musikokouti with Nikos Portokalloglou. He did the arrangements and everything.
Right.
He's a brilliant musician, and I think my connection to him has helped me, open some doors, which is helpful, but at the same time, I never wanted to be, defined by, oh, he's your cousin. And I was very afraid of that when I was on The Voice, because people are very quick to say, oh, this guy has a connection. Because you get too far and people start doubting that you're good enough.
I think they call them Nepo babies.
Yes, Nepo babies, or Visma in Greek, which is like literally a plug.
Yeah. But when you sent the application off, that you literally, that was from cold, you just, like a...
Oh yeah, and it didn't have an upload, because they say you can send in an audio file of you singing. I didn't even do that. It was just a shot in the dark for me. I just sent it over, said, hi, I'm this guy, my name is that, and I sing this and this and this. And it seems they liked it. It was a great experience overall, because... I remember they didn't like the interviewers that talk to you, for them, like headshot videos and everything. They tell you, for the love of God, please don't say I did it for the experience.
Right.
Because everybody says that, because it's very true. It's a very nice experience.
Yeah.
But for me, I think if you go in to win, you've already lost.
Wow.
Because it's not always about how good you are. And it's about how marketable you are in the end, which is fair, to be honest, because it is a business
in the end, and they
want it to be profitable. But I think the most I've won through all of this, and the second time, was meeting other musicians, meeting other people that love singing as much as I do, and love music as much as we all do. And it's apart from having a huge stage and having something like a portfolio on YouTube at all times to see, this is what I have done and what I can do. But people, you meet many, many experienced and fun people to be around in those places.
I mean, I've watched your performances on YouTube. And I put myself in your shoes. Weren't you terrified?
Not really. I mean, you kind of are, especially if it's live. But
it goes out live, does it?
Yeah. So the first three rounds of the game, where the format they have now, because they change it a little bit every time. The first three rounds are recorded, and then the people that get through, which would be about, I think, 16 from every team. Get to the live show, just everything's live, and then they get like narrowed them down.
And is that because people phone up to vote?
Yes.
So it has to be live, because that's another revenue stream to the business, isn't it?
And it was, I never saw how many votes, but it's lots of votes.
So they're making lots of SMS money.
Yeah, yeah, and calls and everything. And
fair enough.
And I'm always happy to hear people, I voted for you, and I'm happy for that. I mean, I'm very. It's a very awkward thing to hear, and a very awkward thing to. What do you respond to it? Because it's like people saying, "Hey, I spent money on you," and it's a weird thing for somebody to say to you. I am very grateful, but
I was going to ask the same question, Matt, because doing a bit of research and background for this. When you watch the shows, it's full on. There's a big stadium full of people. There's just one person on the stage, full band in the background, but all all dimmed, but proper full production. Lights, lasers, pyrotechnics, and boom, and then it comes down to you. And then you must have some big cojones, Yanni. There's no way
you know
on
what?
Earth I would ever stand in that. So can you just put us in that spot, what it felt like? Because, you've got the confidence to step on a stage and you've got a wonderful voice, but just talk us through what it was like so the first time you walked on there and thought, WTF, how did I get here? What's going to happen here?
The first time was very, very weird because it was... I don't have a problem with people or like with a big audience. I used to play theater as well growing up. So I'm very acquainted with, you know, a stage and people. And you know, there's not that many people in the studio. It's, I think it's about 150 or 200.
Oh, okay. It
total.
Looks more in the, in
it
the
looks, room. It looks more cause you know, the shots and everything. And also, the weird thing that not many people know is that all these sounds you hear on TV, like the sounds of the lights and the sounds of the buzzers, they're not there.
Okay. Okay.
These are added in post. So the thing is, when the judges turn a chair, you don't hear the sound.
Right.
So you might not know it. Like, I usually have my eyes closed when I'm singing. So the second time round, when the first chair... turned. I had no idea until I opened my eyes and looked, and you can actually hear that in the audition, that because it was on a high note, on what is it, English Money in New York, and you can hear my voice break a little bit from the surprise of the chair, but it's the first time round. I went on stage very, very early in the episode, in the recording. So it was about, I think, the third one that got on stage, and both of the two people before me, nobody turned.
Oh, really? Just to explain, so if anyone hasn't seen it, the judges have got their backs to you, and if they, and so they're just listening, and if they like what they hear, they hit a big button, it's all very dramatic, and the chair spins around, and you're saying on... some of these people, nobody spinned around, but I knew everybody spinned around.
No, first time around, it was only Panos Mouzourakis that turned.
Okay.
And
you had some where they all span around, didn't you?
Well, yeah, the second time around they did. Yeah. I feel like I marketed myself better the second time around. Being one of the first to be on stage is very frightening, especially if the last two people, nobody turned. And it's...
That's quite brutal, isn't it?
It is, but that's show business.
Yeah, fair enough.
And that's what Panos Mouzourakis said at some point while we were recording. And I think I'm allowed to say this because he said it to all the people in the audience, like if they can know, I mean, everyone else can know. He said, okay, so this is TV. Please remember, everything on TV is fake. I mean, talking about the lights and the people and the noises, and it's so much, it feels way emptier than it actually is. So it's not that...
intimidating.
That intimidating in the end.
Gotcha, yeah.
And also, I also noticed, I mean, you mentioned earlier about your love of many different genres of music. You chose, in both times you went up there, completely different songs.
I want to show range. I wanted to find songs that that expressed me as me, and songs that I liked. And weirdly enough, people seem to think that you don't choose the songs you sing on The Voice, because many people have gone there and they ask you to give them a list of songs that you'd like to sing. And obviously, somebody that, you know, is not a professional singer or doesn't sing that much but still wants to take a crack at it, they have two or three songs that they feel very confident singing, and then the rest are just filling space. But the thing is, you've given them your 10 songs that you would be willing to sing, so if they choose one that you don't like, it's not their fault, it's your fault for choosing songs that you wouldn't be comfortable singing.
Okay.
So do they end up choosing them, or is it kind of a collaboration?
It is kind of a collaboration on the first stages, at least. I mean, in the duets, you cannot choose your own songs because it's another person as well. So the team, the coach decides that. But, you know, it's a mix of what the production deems interesting and fresh, because they don't want to, you know, everyone to be singing House of Rising Sun over and over and over again.
No, that'd be dreadful.
Because that's what would happen if they don't filter out the songs. So if you give them songs that you actually like and that are interesting songs and, you know, and vocally interesting,
mm-hmm.
they'll choose one of these. They're trying and, you know, have some variety as they can. But when you get to the live shows, it's between you and the coach, and the production just has to agree that this is not a song that we would definitely not want on the air.
Oh.
Okay.
Which is fair, because some songs are a little bit, you know, I mean, I guess curse words is not the best for live television.
Yeah, or a particular archive song that begins with F. You.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I don't think they'd be very happy with that.
You wouldn't
want to
do that, would they?
No, not really.
Some Rage Against the Machine or something, yeah.
But there have been people that have said curse words. I mean, I remember the coaches said to a girl that was singing Back to Black by okay. Amy Winehouse. Mm, they were very insistent, why don't you say Kept His Dick Wet?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lyric. When it's lyrics, if it's not like profound, just to be profound, why not?
I don't really listen to lyrics as a musician. Someone gave me the lyric sheet for that because we had to learn it for a gig, and I thought, "Oh, that's quite, it's quite fruity, the lyrics here in this song." Look, I knew it would go this way, and we can talk for hours and hours and hours. But there's a couple of things I want to ask you. So you got you appeared on two seasons. So was that a second application, or did they invite you back? How did that?
It was a second application, and for some reason, because they had a break of 1 year after the year I went for the first time, 2020, like 22, 23, I think. They didn't do a season the following year. So I thought it was cancelled forever.
Okay.
I wasn't very keen on going back. Like I said to myself, I don't really want to.
Sorry to interrupt. And on the first one, did you get through to the semis?
No, in the first round, I got out of the competition in the duets, so the third round.
Okay.
I felt that I didn't show what I would like to show to the world the first time round. I don't know if I wasn't ready vocally or if I didn't have the experience that I had second time round, but if I felt like it didn't do me justice.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in Athens. I've had some minor medical problems that I was, you know, they're very on my mind at the time. And I returned from Athens after seeing all the doctors and everything, and I come back to work. And as I arrive in Patrico, ready to start my shift, I see on Instagram the call, we're looking for people for The Voice. And I said, well, you know what? I'm going to do it again just so I can do it my way. This time.
There's a song about that, isn't there?
Yeah, and I love it. And I wish I thought of singing that on The Voice, because that'd be great.
So you got through to the semis on the second time, is that
yes.
right? Yeah.
Most people think the semifinals are four people. Mm. It's not. It's right. 16.
Okay.
Still, it's quite a feat, because every team starts with like 30, 38 people. So I'm terrible at math, but that's a lot. About 130, 140 probably. Somewhere there.
Wow, that's a lot of people. And there's quite a few performances that people can watch of you and the boys. No, I'm not saying this is your best ever performance, but which one do you think you nailed out of all the ones that went out?
You know what? I
to put you on the spot.
No, it's okay. I do have a favorite. I have a little bit of a Johnny Depp syndrome, so I don't like watching myself.
Yeah.
I like listening to myself. Mm-hmm. Like I'll enjoy listening to the things I've recorded or the things from YouTube, but I hate looking at me perform. But I'm very torn between This Is a Man's World, because it was a song that I really wanted to sing the first time round, and they didn't let me. And they didn't let me. They probably were saving it for some later stage that I never got to. But second time round, I told Panos, the coach, I told him I really want to sing that. I wanted it last time. And it went great. But I think my best performance was Colors, the semi-final, which was an amazing song that I've listened to before, but I didn't even have in my radar. And right after I got through to the live shows, Panos caught me after the recording and told me, I've thought of a couple of songs for you for the next stages. Have a listen to them. And it was Changes by Charles Bradley, mm-hmm. and Colors by Black Pumas. And I fell in love with Colors as a song, because it does show vocal ability, because there's a lot of falsettos and lots of like high notes, and it's a very is descriptive,
colorful.
It's colorful. it has lots of images in it, and I really love that. And they always tell me, oh, you need to stop singing with your eyes closed, because you will have no connection with your audience. But I say, you know what, when I close my eyes and sing, I see what I'm singing, and if I see what I'm singing, I feel like I can show it better to others.
That's interesting. That is interesting, yeah.
Do you ever close your eyes, Matt, when you're on stage?
I run the risk then of making a mistake on the guitar. I have to see the guitar.
Yeah.
I don't operate like Johnny, no. I don't see things. I just panic. What is the next line to this song? That's the way I operate.
Oh, I have that as well.
Awesome. What I find really refreshing, Yanni, and quite unusual as well, is that we live in such a kind of media celebrity obsessed world, and something like this, you know, literally millions of people watch this show, so, and you are on center stage, so maybe millions of people have seen you on stage. You know, you've reached quite a lofty height in terms of anyone who'd be pursuing a music career. And some people might think, well, what's he doing spending his summers here in the middle of nowhere, in the Mani, and, you know, playing a couple of gigs a week? He should be out there and trying to pursue his, you know, his dream. And I don't know, I see you more as like the true spirit of the artist rather than people who try to become entertainers or celebrities.
No, I'm actually very happy to hear that, because I don't want to come off as the guy that's, hey, I've been on The Voice guy. And obviously to people that do music and like there is a potential of collaborating, I usually will talk about that, because it's one more thing that somebody knows about you and might click. But I found it very, very cringy, usually, when people, you know, have been on The Voice and they keep that in their Instagram profiles for years and years and years. Like, how long are you going to, I don't want to say leech, but kind of hold on to that brief, like 15 minutes of fame, as they say. It is a nice way to get people to know you, and like for random people to see you. And I've had only a couple, and far less than my friends that were on The Voice together. I'm very rarely recognized out in public, which is fun. It's fun when it happens, because it doesn't happen too often. But at the same time, I'm not a superstition man. I'm a superstitious man. I don't like, you know, that I'm not very spiritual. But at the same time, I feel like you don't need to push for things more than you have to. I am very happy with what I do. Obviously, I would love to just do music for a living. And I know I'm not there yet, but I'm not saying, oh, I have to do it now and I have to push now, or I'll need to, you know, forget everything and go in Athens and run this and run that and try. I want to take my time. I want to be ready for whatever is coming. So I'm some people say I'm a little short-sighted, that I don't look far into the future. But I like living in the moment. I don't like thinking, oh, what's going to happen after the thing I'm doing now? Because the thing you're doing now is the important thing at the moment. I do have released songs. It was a dark phase where I was doing rap music when I was 16 and 17. I like rap music very much, and I still do write lyrics. But in the end, wasn't the persona for me. What I did there, but a few days ago, actually, I had a sort of epiphany, and I said to myself, because everybody's been telling me I want to release things and I want to record things in coming months after the season, but everybody told me, what are you going to do? You've got two rap songs and you've got a couple of reggae songs and you've got a blues song and then you've got a country soft pop song. So how are you going to do all of this? And I thought to myself, why am I listening to these people? Why should I do separate projects for these? I mean, all these songs are years of my life, are my experiences from when I was like 16, 17 to today. And looking back at them one by one, I can see myself growing through them. As an artist and as a lyricist and as a person, because they're all, you can see it from like coming from a little bit more childish and comedy to a little bit more serious and talking about, you know, society and everything. I know it's a little banal, but at the same time, it's what you feel that you want to get out in the world. So I decided that I am going to record all of these and release them all together in one single EP or album, I don't know what it is, like an experimental album with everything on it, because that's what I have and that's what I want to show. And I don't want them to be like one single and one other thing and then two more. And I feel that's what shows to people what kind of artist I am. Just one who enjoys writing and just doesn't want all these to just vanish.
Well, also, I think I love that, because that's I'm not quite a boomer, but I'm getting on. So I remember how the music industry used to be different. Whereas these days, they sign someone and they want someone to have a hit straight away. So the very fact that you're doing a whole load of different stuff, I think that's the rite of passage that, you know, that an artist should go through. So, and you know, you're still a youngster, so you know, you will find your place.
I don't know, my knees say otherwise.
Believe me, you're a youngster compared to me and Matt.
But you know what I hate, and I really about the music industry at the moment and the entertainment industry in general, it's you kind of have to be an influencer on top of be successful, because everybody thought that the internet would help. And it does help, because everybody can do this now. But that's the bad thing. Mm. Everybody can do this, which is the pool is too big. So I feel like doing something that I believe would be a hit just puts me on the big sack with all the others. And how can you stand out in the middle of a sea of Taylor Swift's, for example? Like,
and they're all on TikTok and Facebook.
Yeah, and I tried to do that, but I can't commit to it. I don't like like recording videos of me singing, and you know, you need all this hardware and all these lights and cameras, because people want it to look good. And with all the the phones and the cameras and the equipment everyone has, everything seems so professional, and I just can't take the time to do that.
Well, ironically, that's kind of something that would make you stand out, isn't it? The very fact that you're not trying to be one of these influences. So I think, so bravo, Yanni, for not being one of those people walking around.
I'm trying my best.
Right, well, thank you very much, Johnny, Yanni.
Thank you for having me.
There's been an interesting chat, and especially as all three of us are involved in music. We promised at the beginning that maybe you'd play a song for us.
Absolutely.
What's the song?
And this song's called Home.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to say a lot about it, it's I've always, when I do play it sometimes on our live shows, when I feel like a more down song wouldn't completely ruin the vibe.
Mm-hmm.
But I always dedicated to people that feel like they quite haven't found their home.
Mm.
Home is where your mind will fall asleep when the day is all gone. Home is when the silence takes its place inside your dome. Then why is the second plate growing cold on the table? Why do I sleep in both sides of my bed? Why doesn't this still feel like home? Is it a kiss and an embrace? A few sweet words or the coals that burn in the fireplace? Is it just me? Or am I just alone in here? Why doesn't this still feel like home? Home is where you're glad to spend your life and just grow old. Home is where the handprints of your dreams have left the tone. Then why, when I fall asleep, I dream of greener grass? Why do I hate the scars of time that's past? Why doesn't this still feel like home? Is it the taste of first dawn's dew? The fizzling leaves or the crickets that cry in the sunset gloom? Is it just me? Or am I just alone in here? What does it take to feel at home? That's when I saw her, just a glimpse in the night, like a dream that's now over, but she's still standing in front of me. I hope this time she's come to stay. I felt the kiss and the embrace. She spoke the words that set my amber soul ablaze. It's not just me.
is two lost souls in here again. Is that what it takes to feel at home? We share the drops of grey skies weep, laid in the grass and kissed until we fell asleep. She's not just me, we're two lost souls in love again. What does it take to feel at home? That's what it takes to feel at home.
Thank you.
That's my kind of song.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Thanks, Yoni.
Thank you very, very much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed listening to that episode. And if you'd like to access exclusive Mani content in the shape of magazine articles, event calendars, news items, local walks, etc., head over to insidethemani.com. and become a member. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.